fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode number 4 of the Johnny and Josh Show. This, of course, is Lou Gehrig's number. It's the number of justice and stability. And in the case of this particular program, probably more appropriate, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. What a great pleasure to welcome JC, Big Dave, and Eric, the producer. Good evening, boys. Are we well?
Goldie, week 4, also a great week for baseball. We are jam-packed full of news this week, right?
A lot of stuff.
We're overflowing. And it's very interesting because for those of you of a biblical nature, what did God do on the fourth day? We all know. He said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night. So if he's that busy, it's appropriate that we should be as well.
I feel he was so organized, God.
Goldie, I feel like this is the one thing you do research on. It's like, okay, we're on show number 5. I'm going to spend 6 hours on understanding show number 4.
My song.
Exactly. And then the rest of it, forget it.
Well, and there's also this day in baseball because we're recording on the 18th of the 4th. So if you want any information on what happened on this day in baseball, then, you know, just give me a shout because I've got them all.
We're okay. It's fine. Moving on.
Okay. Well, let's have a quick COVID update, boys. And it's all been kicking off royally. I've noticed that the Twins and the Angels, their matchup seems to be postponed. There seems to be a COVID outbreak, unfortunately. Andrelton Simmons, who, of course, was a former Angel, now with the Minnesota Twins. And interestingly, a young man who refused to have a vaccine jab. And unfortunately, he's gone down with COVID.
Yeah, that's just deeply disappointing, Goldie. I think we should encourage anyone who listens to this show, anyone in the world, to get your vaccine. It's obviously better for you and better for the people around you. And Simmons is a perfect example of both those facts. He gets COVID. It appears that other people within the Twins organization have gotten it, and it's going to affect the team moving forward.
As a big anti-vaxxer myself, I can give you a spoiler alert. Jesus wasn't vaccinated.
Whoa.
What?
Well,
That's one of my favorite t-shirts of all time. Spoiler alert, Jesus wasn't vaccinated.
Is that doing the round? To the Big Apple?
I can't remember where I saw it. I love it. I thought this was a great chance to say it on the podcast. So job done.
There is a true religious component to this, right? I know we're going to go down the wrong path here, but you know, there's an effect on stem cells that people who are very devoutly religious feel that the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines sort of run counter to their religious beliefs.
Which is then becomes very complicated, doesn't it? Keeping it slightly more simple for the basis of a baseball podcast, the impact...
This Week in Baseball and Religion, starring Johnny Gould.
But in terms of the impact it's having on the season, we were talking at the beginning of last season about there's no way they're getting through 60 games, and we're going to try and get to 162 games, and already it's rearing its ugly head. What's happening north of the border in Canada? What's the latest from there?
I wish I had better news. I spoke to many friends, family members, and people who work in sports media back home in Canada. And one thing that has surfaced is that the Buffalo Bison, who have now given up their stadium for the Blue Jays again, they advertised recently jobs within the stadium, i.e. cashiers, parking lot attendants, hot dog vendors, my favorite people. And they were actually advertised jobs with contracts that run up to September. So is that an indication saying that, okay, the Blue Jays will be here till at least September? Now, the government of Ontario and the city of Toronto, they've recently just banned all public events. They have a stay indoors policy for the next 6 weeks until at least July 1st. There was no public concerts or anything of that nature, which means there'll be no baseball till at least July 2nd, if you're lucky. So I say if you're a Blue Jays fan, sadly expect the Blue Jays to be back in the city of Toronto no earlier than September.
It's not just Canada that's struggling. It's not just the Minnesota Twins that are struggling. I mean, I've got players in the Houston Astros in my fantasy baseball lineup.
Okay, that's
on my COVID IL.
First waffle reference. Oh, by the way, I got nice posh waffles for this show. It's more sophisticated waffles. Thank you very much.
It looks like you've already eaten the outside of it. But
it's the edges.
But guys, the Astros are struggling as well. Is that not right? Am I certainly?
You know, Dusty just isn't right.
It's not Dusty. It's Buddy Alvarez and Bregman and Altuve. They're all on the COVID list. So,
anyways, let's move on.
Goldie?
That's okay. Moving on. Okay.
It is trivia time.
Talking of trivia. Eric.
Yes. In the news this week, Max Scherzer, formerly the Detroit Tigers, he actually surpassed Cy Young for most career strikeouts, putting him 22nd all time on the list of career strikeouts.
Well done,
which is very impressive in itself. You know, great pitcher and all. My question to you is: he also, in that same game, that was his 99th game, where he had 10 or more strikeouts within one game. So 99 games is currently with the current active pitchers, the record for most 10 plus strikeouts in one game, 99. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, who has the career strikeouts, most 10 plus strikeout games, if you know what I'm saying, right? So in career strikeouts.
Are we doing multiple choice?
Yes, we are.
Go on then.
Multiple guess in your case. Is it A, Nolan Ryan? I think you've heard of him.
Yeah.
Or is it B, Randy Johnson? Or is it C, Roger Clemens?
Ooh.
So yes, which are those three pitchers that had the most games with 10 or more strikeouts? Answer later on in the show.
Three great pitchers.
Nah, they're all right. They were handy in their time.
No talking.
Josh, everybody knows they were three great pitchers. That's not particularly...
I thought I was being insightful.
Okay, moving on. We're into the leadoff batter, which is this week, the news roundup. Okay, guys, we're going to kick off with the White Sox no-no, the legend that is Carlos, for what was, I believe, only the, I've got it written down somewhere and I've already lost it. Not many times in the franchise history has
Good
anybody thrown a no-hitter.
The 20th.
20th, that was the word I was looking for. The 20th no-hitter in franchise history. You've got to love Carlos Rodon, a player that I tipped at the top of the season, which makes me a great fantasy baseball player.
This is a really compelling story because it is an example of perseverance. You think about Rondon. He was a first round draft pick out of North Carolina State. So really high expectations and really hadn't lived up to it. Had Tommy John surgery. So it looked like, you know, his career was going down. He got non-tendered, which means that the price for his contract for the Chicago White Sox was so high. They're like, look, we don't want you unless you're going to renegotiate at a lower price. We just don't want to deal with you. Came back to the White Sox, nevertheless, on a lesser contract than what he probably could have gotten. And here he is as, you know, the back of the rotation pitcher with, for the first time, probably in his career, low expectations. And he throws a no hitter. Fantastic.
I mean, a no-hitter is impressive, Dave, but when you look at the actual stats of this no-hitter, he'd retired the first 25 Cleveland batters before he hit Roberto Perez, who's leading off in the ninth. So he was so close to a perfect game.
So close, and somebody on the field was yelling at Perez about, like, why don't you just move your foot, man? like, what's wrong with you, dude? Like, this guy's about to have a perfect game, and there it goes. Just as we were so close. But still, as you know, as Josh alluded to, a tremendous story. And it's just so funny how it works out in baseball. 20 no-hitters for the White Sox. I know they've been around, I believe, since the AL right around 1903. And the Mets have had one, if you even want to count it. And the Padres have only had one, and some teams have 20. It's just funny how it works.
And it's interesting about the concept of etiquette, Josh, in terms of what behavior of batters in a situation like that, that there is some unwritten rules, as there always are in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the one is you don't bunt for a base hit.
Yeah,
right?
Like, you're not laying down a bunt.
The big one. I mean, if someone throws the ball, and we've obviously had this discussion about hit by pitches already this season, but so someone throws it inside like that, you take it and you take the base. I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. You know, if there are unwritten rules, they were scrawled in the margins and should be crossed out for that, in my opinion.
My favorite story of the week, and this one I'm sure is going to appeal to Eric, is the Nacho man, Justin Turner, hitting a solo shot for the Dodgers and takes out a guy's nachos. Cheese sauce everywhere, Eric. You must have related to that.
actually, there's. I wanted to actually dig deep into this story on two levels. Justin Turner, yes, he hit a home run the other night that went into a guy's nachos behind the left field fence, and splashed nacho cheese sauce all over the guy. He was covered in, the ball was covered in cheese sauce. His shirt was covered in cheese sauce. His face was covered in cheese sauce. It was just an explosion of nachos and cheese. And Justin Turner kindly found out about it, and he ordered him from the dugout. I don't know how he did it. He ordered another plate of nachos for the guy, and the stadium actually gave him a clean sweatshirt as well.
It's not the best, by the way, not the best food and drink foul ball story, which is, and I'll probably try and find it on YouTube. Guy hits a foul ball, a fan catches it with his beer cup, catches it, so the ball's in the cup, then drinks the whole beer. That beats the nacho.
That's absolutely.
No, but the best thing about the nacho story, and by the way, nacho explosion all over your shirt, for Eric Jansen, that's sometimes known as just like a Tuesday night. The best part of that story was that some fan took a nacho and like dipped it into his shirt and then ate it. If you've seen the film, that was, for me, that was the French kiss of the story.
I tell you what was cool though, because Eric picked up on the fact that the club provided him with a top. It was actually a World Series limited edition hoodie. So that was pretty cool to get that. I imagine, you know, picking up the laundry bill was the least of the man's worries. He was probably quite chuffed all around.
Exactly. The second thing I wanted to dig deeper into this nacho story is whenever Josh and I would go to games together, and you know, whatever, in our road trips or in the past, whatever game we were at, and nachos and cheese was always his go-to dish. I'm the hot dog guy at a ballpark, or whatever is the signature dish of that particular ballpark is what I always flock to. But Josh would always go for the nachos and cheese. And here's my, people will be surprised by what I'm going to say next. I hate nachos and cheese at a ballpark.
No.
Yeah.
That is a revelation.
Hey, exactly. This is what it's all about dialogue, this topic. And this is a very serious issue to discuss as well.
I love that you remember that about me, Eric. I'm going to tell a story about my childhood. We had season tickets. It's not a baseball story, but a hockey story. We had season tickets to the Los Angeles Kings when I was a kid and into my teenage years. And there were a couple of times where literally I would drive to Inglewood to the Fabulous Forum where the Kings used to play. I would go into the stadium because no one else who had the season tickets with me were taking the tickets. I would go in, I would buy nachos, I would eat the nachos, and I would leave and go home.
No way.
Whoa, what a story.
At least a couple of times in my
life. Did you not go somewhere else and get nachos? Did you have to schlep to Inglewood?
I loved the nachos at the Fabulous Forum. Okay,
now, so, see, the thing is, nachos at a Mexican restaurant, properly baked and cooked in oil.
It's the Velveeta nachos.
No, but Josh likes to go at ballparks. He goes straight for the cardboard triangles covered with melted plastic cheese.
So I wrote a book called How the Hot Dog Found Its Bun. It's about accidental discoveries, unexpected inspirations in the food world. The nachos were an unexpected creation. The original nachos that you're talking about. But I also talk about the history of like the Velveeta, you know, like fake cheese nachos too, which were invented in Texas. So again, I know it's going to be book of the week this week, next week, something like that. But you can read the whole story about that.
Okay, well, moving on. That's the thing. The bottom line is I think I have a more sophisticated palate than you guys. So there we go.
Oh my God. Yes. Lips and assholes versus cardboard triangles. Both of you are very sophisticated.
I just love the fact that JC could turn a conversation about nachos and cheese sauce into some kind of scientific study with a PhD level of attitude. Yeah,
I'm loving that. It is fascinating.
Loving that.
Next topic.
It is great. It's great. Right, moving on. Tatis is back, boys. Minimum stay on the 10-day IL, much to everybody's joy. And his first game back, 1-for-6, couple of defensive errors, but he hit the home run. And guess what? We now have what I would suggest is the best rivalry in baseball right now, the San Diego Padres and the LA Dodgers. Wow, what a story.
Yeah, I mean, the phrase now is that there are 19 World Series games in the regular season, and those are the games between the Padres and the Dodgers. And the first two really lived up to every expectation you could have. A fantastic extra innings game. The second game, Mookie Betts with a diving catch to save it for the Dodgers. It's going to get tenser and tenser because you have players who play with a lot of passion. You've got Trevor Bauer with the Dodgers, who, you know, is, if he does anything well, is going to flaunt it. You've got Manny Machado with the Padres, who is, you know, a player with a lot of fire. So I think this is just going to build up. I don't think this there's going to be no diffusing of this rivalry as long as these two teams have the type of rosters they have right now.
And we were talking about the nature of the injury, which was obviously a dislocated left shoulder. I mean, great news to the Padres that this is their key player. And it would seem to suggest that he's okay. Or would you be concerned with the defensive errors? Let's face it, he didn't make any or virtually none last season. And I think he's already made three or four this season. So perhaps there is an issue.
That probably wouldn't be related to his shoulder injury because it's his left shoulder. Okay. And the mechanics of throwing, it wouldn't affect it. What an injury to your left shoulder would do would affect your bat speed. Because, you know, if you're having that pain in the follow through, if you're a right-hander and with your left arm, and clearly if you're hitting home runs, the bat speed's still there probably.
One thing we have to mention about this rivalry, although it is getting hot and the Padres have been wildly ambitious and made some great moves, and we applaud that. Thank you for helping create this. Right now, the Dodgers have won 8 in a row. They're 13-2, and they've beaten – they've beaten their rivals, two on the trot, albeit two very competitive and fun baseball games to watch. And the Padres are already 4.5 games back. And it just goes to show you that even despite the wonderful moves that the Padres made in trying to, you know, kind of boost their franchise and bring it to an elite level, just how far and away the Dodgers are the best, not only in the division, but in baseball. There's still Absolutely. A way to go yeah. for the Padres.
You Darvish came out and said they're the best lineup by far, and he pitched great against them.
Great.
And why they're so great is that they have great plate discipline, so they don't waste at bats. And but when they're aggressive, they are really aggressive and they hit bombs, and it's just from top to bottom that lineup's amazing. And then you look at the starting rotation and you see Clayton Kershaw, who's 132, and the dude can still deal.
And I think the biggest signing for the Dodgers, believe it or not, I know there's the sexier stuff with like Bauer. But I think a lot of teams looking at an aging Justin Turner might have turned away from him, but he's obviously meant a tremendous amount to this team over the past 5 or 6 years. I just think it was incredibly smart not to do the thing and just look at his age and say, let's move on. He works on that team. He fits like a glove on that team. He's extremely valuable. He's really playing exceptionally well.
You know, I'm going to say right now, it's like, forget Red Sox, Yankees, forget Cardinals, Cubs. This could be a new rivalry in the mix for everyone to tune into. And this is getting to be a fun grudge match. Next topic.
Okay, we move on to possibly my favorite topic. It's the Badu Watch, our legendary Akil. We were talking about keeping an update. First and foremost, we were asking everybody for funny puns. We've had some great suggestions, vetoed by Eric because he's a spoil sport, much Badu about nothing. We've got What's New, Mr. Badu from Stephen Crane. Colin at Costa2310 on Twitter is a massive Badu fan, brought him into his side. I think the Tigers themselves, Eric, have said Yabba Dabba Do, which I think is great. But I think my personal favourite, and I can't find who said it, but somebody came up with, and this is my personal favourite, guys, A View to a Kill. How good is that?
A nice Roger Moore reference in Bond.
Exactly. You can't get enough Roger Moore references. So.
I would say this is probably our unanimous pick, right? And we just got to go back and check the tape to figure out who said that, because they get a proverbial hat tip from all four of us.
Well, if we're going to continue then to do the Badu Watch, which I really want to do. So it's now known as A View to a Kill. What is the view looking like, Eric? Because it was unbelievable to start with, but not so good now.
Well, no, you know, since we were last on air, he hit another home run and he looked amazing. And since that day, he went 0-for-8 over two games and was dropped in yesterday's game. But at the time of recording, he is in today's lineup on a Sunday. So let's hopefully, by the time we finish recording, maybe he's hit another grand slam. And A View to a Kill is much, much Badu about something.
Very good. Okay. Well, let's just hope we haven't jinxed
the man. Take my wife, please.
Down to the minors, yeah. Okay, moving on swiftly. Jacob deGrom, possibly, well, without a shadow of a doubt, the best pitcher, the best starting pitcher in the major leagues. You could even argue in recent years, let alone this season, with an absolute humdinger in a 7-inning doubleheader game. He pitched 6 of those 7 innings, 14 strikeouts. Almost lost. That's the stat that I love. Dave, I mean, the Mets, they've got to sort themselves out. That boy deserves some love.
So I'm at the dog park yesterday, and I'm listening to the game.
Great intro.
And he's piling up the strikeouts, and he's getting closer to Seaver, which is 10 straight. And all I keep thinking the whole time is, man, he's going to lose again. he's got Drake Seaver's record. He's going to lose. And you know what? It wasn't fun because it was so stressful.
Yeah.
Because you're like, you know, the guy only gets about 32 or 33 starts a year. And this is what I always used to say to my dad. I said, you know, it doesn't matter if DeGrom gets the win, but the Mets really do have to win games in which he pitches. They need this guy as their ace. So if he doesn't personally get the win, as long as the Mets win on the day, that's, I think, what really matters. But you could just see this has been going on virtually for his entire career in a Mets uniform. And you could just see that happening again. Luckily, he was bailed out when he came out in the 6th inning and the Mets scored 3 in the top of the 7th there. It was a shortened game because it was the first game of a pair of 7-inning doubleheaders. And they managed to win, and all is well, and they got him to win. This is what stuck out for me. I was listening to the game. This is what the radio guy said. They have a thing with an advertiser where they have to pick the defensive play of the game, right? And you know, it's like, I don't know, some sponsor. It's sponsored, and they couldn't pick a play because 17 out of the 21 outs recorded in the game were from strikeouts. They only had four to pick from. I thought that was pretty telling and pretty amusing.
Two things on this, and you're very right, David. Obviously, DeGrom has been such a hard luck pitcher for the Mets. But in this game, he actually needed his offense to bail him out, like you said. I mean, he gave up 3 runs. He loses games often like 1-0, things of that nature. So this wasn't his best performance. But the strikeout element, and I know it's still impressive to strike out 9 in a row, just falling short of Tom Seaver, who struck out 10 in a row in 1970. But that's reflective of the game now, right? The 3 true outcomes. We're seeing walks, strikeouts, or home runs. It's what's sucking the lifeblood out of the sport. And so as neat as it is, it's also a reflection of something that's a little dark and lost in baseball at the moment.
That's correct. But can I just mention one thing? In case you're not completely amazed by Jacob deGrom already, just for his pitching skills, his OPS at the moment is 1.143. He's batting .571. And he was the guy who started off the inning when the Mets got that run earlier in the game. So he is basically doing it all right now.
Yeah, when your team can't hit for you, you got to hit for yourself, right?
That's it.
JC, is this an issue we need to discuss in more detail in future podcasts, the concerns you have about the way the game's going?
Oh, absolutely. And I know we are, and even in this one, because there are some, you know, examples of some minor league changes that are going to occur this year that are with a view to this issue. And how you do it is a huge part of it. But we'll discuss that when we get to it.
Okay. Right. We're talking about legends of baseball. Let's talk about Joey Votto. Triple play on Saturday. I mean, it's unbelievable when you look at it. 37 years old. This is no spring chicken. This is only the 31st triple play in the Reds franchise history. I love Joey Votto. I can't believe he's still as good as he is.
A man of good Canadian stock as well, Matt.
All right, quick impromptu trivia. More triple plays or no hitters in baseball?
Oh,
good question.
No hitters. No hitters. Yeah.
Any other guesses?
I'll go triple play, actually. I know there's been a lot.
Eric Jansen wins almost double the number. I think there's something around 733 triple plays and 300 and something no hitters.
Wow.
I looked it up, yeah.
Not including the one in the odd couple.
Cha-cha-cha. The story is made better by the fact that the triple play came in the same week that The Athletic, which is a great publication if you don't subscribe to it, did a story that was a oral history of Joey Votto. And this guy, I know we talk about Zach Greinke and what an interesting player he is. I actually could make a very easy argument that Joey Votto is the most interesting player after reading this oral history. He's a guy who every offseason decides to become an expert at something new. I guess apparently last offseason he decided he'd become a chess master, and it occurred. And unlike Greinke, who can be a little asocial, the thing about Joey Votto is he's friendly with everyone. And on first base, he will strike up the strangest conversations with players. So Steve Piscotty, who is an outfielder, with the Cardinals and been around the big leagues for a while, is on first base. They don't talk for a few pitches. And then all of a sudden, Votto goes to him, "Hey, you went to Stanford and studied engineering." And Piscotty's surprised that Votto even knows this. He goes, and then Votto goes, "So what have you learned from your engineering degree that helps you on the baseball field?" I mean, that's like kind of an insightful question. So the part, though, that I loved the most about it amongst the oral history was that apparently he likes to mop. He likes at home to go and mop.
Who doesn't?
And he'll send videos, though, to his teammates of him mopping. Apparently he sent one where it's just all you see is an empty, picture. Music's playing. And then Votto sort of saunters in with his mop to do some cleaning.
One of my favorite things about Joey Votto is one day he gave a post-game interview wearing a full Mounties uniform. He went to
back
in the dugout and came out, and he was wearing a full RCMP Canadian Mountie uniform.
I want to know what Stephen Piscotty said. I want to know what the answer was.
Yeah, I don't believe the article expressed it, because that's the type of secret you kind of want to keep,
I want to know that. If I ever run into Stephen Piscotty, I'm going to ask him that.
We need more Joey Votto's in our game. Moving on, next topic.
Yeah, and I'd like to mention the fact that he was a two-time Lou Marsh Trophy winner as Canada's Athlete of the Year. So we love Joey. Great story. Congratulations on the triple play. And now we're going to focus on another great athlete, the Williams Astudillo. Is that how you pronounce it, boys? Because I've got to be honest with you.
Astudillo. Astudillo.
Okay. Now, this guy I have never heard of. I've checked him out. He is weighing in at 225 pounds, 5'9" tall.
What's that in stone, Gordon?
That is, well, I'll do a quick calculation. That's big. That's all you need to know. That's a big man. That's not a natural athlete.
For longtime Red Sox fans, he is the positional player equivalent of Rich Garces.
Right.
That's what he even looks like. They have a little bit of a similarity.
Or Mo Vaughn.
But despite that bulk, JC, despite that bulk and he's a utility player, finds himself on the mound delivering, and wait for it, a 46-mile-per-hour fastball. Phenomenal.
Yeah, and threw for a strike, Gouldie, which is not easy. I looked back. This is actually the second time he's pitched in a major league game. The first time, he gave up 5 runs. It got absolutely lit up. This time, he throws a scoreless inning. And I think what's really impressive is 46 miles an hour to throw a strike is really hard. But then he came back with like a 72-mile-an-hour fastball. I talk about this often. It's not about your velocity. It's about your ability to change speeds. To be honest, the balls that were hit against him were absolute lasers, just right at people. But I loved it. I like it when positional players pitch. It's become a rarity now. There's a new rule that you can only do it in extra innings. And we saw it actually this week as well, too. Jake Cronenworth pitched in the Dodgers-Padres game in extra innings, actually struck out Mookie Betts, or when a team is up by 6 runs or more. And that's what occurred right here. So, or they're designated as a two-way player like Otani. So it's more of a rarity now, but I think it's a lot of fun.
And the batter, he took the pitch. So the question is, what was he looking for in that spot?
You say that, but honestly, when you face velocity that's so below what you're accustomed to, you can get yourself out because you get so far in front of the ball. Sure. We talk about rolling over and hitting choppers, but you can actually jam yourself by getting so far in front. And I've told Gouldie this story. When we played against the Cricketers in the Marcus Triscothic event, Ashley Giles was pitching. He actually got me out. I grounded out to the third baseman because I jammed myself. He threw so slow that the ball, I was so far around on the ball that I hit just a weak grounder to the third baseman. So it's actually probably a good choice not to swing.
Okay, moving on. And this is the biggest story of the lot. There's a lot of news to get through. This is the last story we're going to focus on. And that is, of course, that we have just celebrated on Thursday, April the 15th, the Jackie Robinson Day and the legend that was the Brooklyn Dodger. Hall of Famer, of course, and the man that broke the sports color barrier all the days back in 1947. So I think that makes it the 74th anniversary. Big day. What are your experiences and your memories, Dave and JC, of this particular day in a baseball calendar?
Well, for me, I mean, it just goes back to my father and just all the stories he told about, you know, the Boys of Summer and Jackie Robinson and the Brooklyn Dodgers and things like that. And when we finally took him to Dodger Stadium, we took him actually for Vin Scully night. He had never been to Dodger Stadium. He'd never been to Los Angeles. And we took him to a game and we took him to the statue. And, you know, it was just great for him to actually see the other end of the Dodgers history being out in L.A. And, of course, all the contributions that Jackie Robinson made later. I had an opportunity to work for the Jackie Robinson Foundation, writing some letters to try to generate funds. And I remember getting my check from the Jackie Robinson Foundation and like not wanting to cash it because I was so excited to have a check on it that said from the Jackie Robinson Foundation. But Josh had a little quick trivia. I've got a little quick trivia for you too. Who was the last Dodger to wear number 42? Ooh. Believe it or not, it was not Jackie Robinson. Any takers?
Wow, that's a good one. I know not.
Hit us up, buddy.
Okay, so there was a relief pitcher named Ray Lamb who had just been called up. He went to USC and he wore number 42, and the equipment manager made a mistake and issued number 42, and he actually went on the mound, and he did pitch 3.1 scoreless innings wearing number 42 for the Dodgers. And by then, everybody kind of realized the mistake, and the Dodgers took it away and gave him 34.
That's a great story. That's a really good one. The
number was retired across Major League Baseball back in 97. I love the fact that Yankees pitcher Mariano Rivera made his MLB debut in 95. He was issued with a number 42, and he's made a big deal about what an absolute honor it was for him, which says everything about the significance of what Jackie Robinson achieved.
Yeah, and players were grandfathered in, so he was the last number 42 in Major League Baseball. I think this Jackie Robinson Day is particularly poignant because it happens in the same year that Major League Baseball decided to move the All-Star Game based on issues and concerns about voting rights legislation in Georgia and how that impacts, to be honest, African-Americans in that state. And there's been a lot of conjecture that Jackie would have been very pleased with Major League Baseball taking that kind of stand. And whatever the reason is for them doing it, it certainly is a stand, and it certainly is brave on some level.
I have to just get this story out. I just want to say this one thing about my father. I don't want to bring the show down, but he passed away in February. My wife is always like, you know, you have to look around for signs. And I'm like, whatever, I don't believe in that stuff. But my son yesterday played in his very first Little League game. And a week before that, we have to go to the shop. It's a really old fashioned, like sporting goods shop. You would love it. Jay said you would love it. It would remind you of everything as a kid. All like the jerseys stacked up and the local, it's great. It's small, it's tight. There's stuff everywhere. It's great. And they, you know, they have a deal with the league and they provide the uniforms. So you go in and the guy hands my son number 42.
Wow.
I'm like, that's the first sign I've gotten from my father. If you believe into that stuff, there's the sign.
Oh, that's awesome, mate. And I think it's amazing that you're so competitive that you're putting your 26-year-old son in Little League. That is awesome. Love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Very weird response, but it's very nice.
Just trying to break the ice here, guys.
That's the uncomfortable breath and taking the emotion. Pressure. Right, exactly.
My heartfelt story and turning into like something weird.
That's a lovely story.
I don't know what to segue to the bit that I'm wearing, Brooklyn Dodgers outfit myself, if you're watching on YouTube. And if not, of course, Montreal, the city of Montreal, we mentioned this last season when they honored Jackie Robinson. How the city of Montreal is very proud of his heritage that he went to the Montreal Royals, played for the Montreal Royals at the farm team for the Dodgers before he came down to Brooklyn to play for the Dodgers. And so there you go. I know I'm 2 days late for the party, but we honor Jackie Robinson's 42.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A Hall of Famer on all levels. Okay. That's it for the news roundup. We move on our second banner. And that is the minor league rule experiment. And I know, JC, you've got some very significant views on all the changes that they're trying to introduce.
Yeah, well, basically, because the minor leagues have been contracted, the teams that are affiliated with major league clubs, Major League Baseball has gone out and created relationships with some of the independent leagues. As you guys know, I played in the Frontier League, which is one of the leagues now that has a relationship with Major League Baseball. But the one that's probably the highest in terms of players of seniority is the Atlantic League. And they're really using the Atlantic League as a petri dish for some ideas that they have to potentially use within organized baseball and then eventually Major League Baseball. And two that have just recently come out is in the second half of the Atlantic League season, they're going to move the mound back from 60 feet, 6 inches to 61 feet, 6 inches, moving it back a full foot, which presumably makes it more difficult for pitchers to throw with velocity, gives hitters a little bit more time to identify pitches. I am a huge opponent of this. I think that there are a lot of ways in which you can deal with this issue, but this is a really foolhardy way to do it. We talk about the important numbers of baseball, 90 feet, you know, between the, you know, the bases, 60 feet, 6 inches. You don't mess with that. That has not been changed, you know, since the 20th, you know, since the 19th century. Obviously after 1968, the mound was lowered, but that didn't change the distance. This is changing the distance. And I think what Major League Baseball is not understanding is that baseball is a game of adjustments, not in terms of the distances, but in terms of how players approach each other and what they do. And I think a lot of hitters could be doing better at the plate, not striking out as much, making more contact. If they got rid of launch angle and trying to hit home runs in every at bat and the all or nothing approach, and went back to being more contact hitters, there's a choice that's being made there by a lot of these batters to go all or nothing. And that could address this issue more than changing the distances between home plate and the pitcher's mound.
Dave, are you equally as heated on this subject?
I do agree with Josh about the numbers, and messing with those is an extremely difficult thing to do and not necessarily the smartest move you can make. I don't necessarily have an issue with a league like the Atlantic League playing around with it and just taking a look as they try and flush out different reasons why these games have less action and are taking too long. I don't mind, you know, seeing some of the tinkering down there. Like, I don't have a strong allegiance to Atlantic League baseball. It's okay. And I don't think it's going to necessarily impact the development of the prospects. I find it interesting that you're doing it in the second half of the season so they can compile, you know, data with a traditional mound and then compile in the same season and compile data from the longer mound. They have some other things they're doing down there as well. Don't they have that weird DH rule where they're, where they're experimenting with the, there's a term for it.
DH hook.
Thank you. The DH hook, where you lose your DH when the starting pitcher goes out.
These are
interesting things. And I don't have a problem with this going on because the games are too long and the three outcomes, the walk, the home run, or the strikeout are a huge issue. You know, I made a joke about the Mets game having no choice for a defensive play. 17 out of 21 outs came via strikeout, but that is a disgrace. And in the Padres Dodgers game, which was we all really enjoyed, but the fact of the matter is in the first three innings, we already had 8 strikeouts and there wasn't a whole lot going on. So something has to be done, and why not play with it down in the Atlantic League?
And I don't have a problem with that. And I know that a lot of the discussion about this change is one that, hey, we're going to try it out, but really it's not something that's on the table. We're probably not going to see it. I feel badly, honestly, as someone who played in indie ball, I know that the players in those leagues are trying to make their way back to organized baseball. And so you're messing with their careers to a certain extent as sort of laboratory rats for people who are, you know, in organized baseball. So I don't love that. But I agree with you, David, on principle that, hey, let's give it a shot. I do love the DH hook, the idea that when the pitcher goes, because it's a strategy issue, right? It changes. It forces you to keep the starting pitcher in longer if you want to keep that hitter in the game. It forces teams to think more deeply about their strategy without changing the basic fundamentals of the game. So to me, that's
a little confusing though, isn't it? It's confusing because in the way you construct your roster, because you realize, you know, a lot of times your DH is your best hitter, not as much as it used to be perhaps, but to some extent. And the fact that you may lose your DH or have to shift him, I guess, into the field after the sixth inning forces you to make some interesting decisions when you're constructing your roster.
And that's great, right? Because then it requires players who are more well-rounded than just, you know, the aging slugger who you can slot in that role. So again, it creates more thought, more strategy. So I'm a fan of that one more than the changing the runner, the mound.
Okay. Okay. It's a debate that's going to continue, and we're going to need to get our listeners in on this debate in future shows. Right, moving on. Third batter of the night. And that is, of course, the baseballization of cricket. Such a big story that it actually made the Daily Mail online, boys.
And the Times.
Organization.
And the Times, absolutely. It's all over. It's not baseball. Fans are slating the ridiculous plans to Americanize cricket by replacing wickets and batsmen with outs and batters and using American terminology to appeal to a new, and by that we all know they mean younger audience. Traditionalists are up in arms, but then again, all traditionalists are up in arms about the whole concept of this new competition, the 100, whereas 100 deliveries, which is obviously 20 less than a traditional T20 game that is already considered the modernization of cricket. So traditionalists are up in arms. What do you guys think? Okay, that's good. Well, we're going to move on.
Good talk, guys. Good talk.
I mean, okay, let me take it then, because I'm the cricketer.
Yeah, you should, Gouldie. I mean, that's why I thought you were going to take it. Yeah.
What are you asking us for?
Yeah, okay. No, I am the cricket guy. I was just feeding you in. But no, okay, I'm the cricket guy.
Johnny, let me ask you a question. What do you think of the new American adaptations in the 100 cricket, whatever it's called?
I'm so glad you asked, Dave, because clearly you haven't read the article. This 100 competition has got everybody's knickers in a twist. I'm not quite sure why. At the end of the day, if it ends up replacing all aspects of cricket, traditional cricket, the test match, the five-day test, or the county series, then yes, I think it's a bad thing. Long-term, I think it rips the heart out of the game. And this is similar to your views on what's happening in minor league baseball, Josh. That I would be in opposition to. But there's no question that cricket needs to be dynamic and cricket needs to go out and attract a younger audience. And unfortunately, you know, the kids of today just do not have that same sort of long-term attitude. And it's only by gaining the interest of a child in cricket that they will then mature and develop into an appreciator of a test match, which is the ultimate form. So as long as they can avoid the danger of usurping one and destroying one as they progress another, I don't have a problem with it. And quite frankly, I don't have a problem with the terminology. It's a different competition. So if you use different terminology in the same way that they brought in coloured outfits when they, you know, wearing yellows and greens and pinks and blues when you were playing T20 rather than the traditional white, it's a different game, though it's the same sport. So I think people are just getting all very worked up about nothing. That's my view.
I thought what was fascinating is that American culture has that much of an impact. I mean, the number of people who play cricket around the world is vast.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sport that has its own culture. I mean, you go to India, obviously, you know, a lot of the former British protectorates and such, you know, the Virgin Islands and so forth. And the fact that there's a feeling that they would use American language, that they would use baseball language, is interesting to me that baseball has that level of impact on a sport that has as many people playing it, if not more.
We've all been to cricket matches, all four of us together.
I love cricket.
Yeah, one of my big regrets is that I never got a chance. We were going to go, Gouldie, and play, and I really wanted an opportunity to play the sport. One of the things I hate sports snobbery. It's one of like my big pet peeves.
Oh.
I saw this when I was in the UK with people who didn't know anything about baseball and
right.
They slag Rounders.
It off.
Exactly. And people who slag off cricket is boring. You just don't understand the sport if you're slagging off these sports that have this type of history. And
let me tell you something. ESPN in the United States, they're offering a lot of cricket now. I spent a lot of the winter watching like the Windies play and some of the stuff down in New Zealand. It's great. I agree with Josh about sports snobbery. Rugby, for example, I know Johnny loves rugby. I do not love rugby. I don't like the game at all. But I'll tell you what, I respect the game. They're great athletes. They're talented. It's a great sport with great traditions. It's just not for me, but I respect it.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
100% agree.
One thing, before we move on, I want to say about this. I always say that whenever I meet people who say, oh, I hate baseball or I hate insert sport here, it was such a stupid. I said, no, I'd always respond, no, you don't hate baseball. you have a fear of liking baseball.
No, that's not true.
Because
wow,
it's like you are purposely
you just went in someone's head and did a jig.
You're trying to hate baseball because you don't want to like it, or you can apply that to any sport. Whenever you, I hate football.
Yeah, it's true of footy in the U.S. Right. It's all the time.
You have a fear of liking football. Exactly.
I'd go further. If when somebody says that to me, my response is, no, you don't hate it. You don't understand it.
I've got to say, I love Eric's response more, because it's more aggressive to say you don't understand it. You're telling people what they do and don't understand. But to say you're scared of liking it, that is diabolical. That is diabolical.
It works.
Whenever someone comes up to me and says, like, you know, Johnny, he's so arrogant. I don't like him. He's got a big mouth.
What?
I say to them, you know, you just
you're
have
afraid
a fear
to like
of liking
him.
Johnny Gould.
Exactly.
That's what I say all the time.
Hang on. Okay. How many people are coming up to you and saying that?
It happens all the time. Right?
Moving on, Goldie.
It's a line.
Moving on. One thing I want to say as well, I had the privilege of meeting the great Richie Beno. And for those who don't know who Richie Beno is, he is one of the legendary cricket commentators, globally renowned around the world.
Not just a commentator, Eric, one of the greatest
cricketers
ever
well.
To play the game. Yeah.
Thank you for usurping my follow through of the, not only was he an amazing commentator, he was an amazing cricketer as well. Because
Johnny just said that.
Whenever I was able to speak to him, and when he found out I worked in Major League Baseball on Channel 5, he sat down with me and he told me he used to play baseball in the cricket offseason in Australia. He used to travel and he would, just like a consummate pro, in intimate detail, just tell me about how he batted, how he fielded, and how he loved actually playing baseball in the cricket offseason in Australia.
I mean, there's a tremendous amount of crossover. I got to catch Freddie Flintoff pitching off the
pitch. Yeah, that's right. Anyways, moving on.
Okay, we're moving into the seventh inning stretch. And I just have to say and make it official that I've worked hundreds of cricket events, and my biggest disappointment is I never met Richie Beno. But luckily for me, I've met a man who has, and that man is Derek Jansen, with our baseball book of the week. Over to you, Eric.
Yes, well, baseball and pop culture is the name of the game here. And Johnny said baseball book of the week, but you know what? I'm not going to do baseball book of the week this week. Wow. I decided to add another element to the poll just for this week.
Curveball.
Just for this week, I'm gonna talk about the game Monopoly. Just for the hell of you know Parker okay. Brothers in 19.
19- I love Monopolies.
You love Monopoly. God, I'm good. It's a great board game, isn't it? So the Monopoly, and you know, it was in 1903. It was known as it came out as it's called the Landlord's Game. And then sort of evolved into Monopoly when Parker Brothers got the copyright of it in 1933. And in 1935, they made a British version of Monopoly, the board game. Well, the British version had, you know, the most expensive piece of property is in Mayfair, while in the US version, it's in Park Avenue. And by the way, just out of coincidence, the Major League Baseball headquarters and front office is on Park Avenue in New York. Did you know that? Now, the thing about the board game Monopoly as well. In World War II, they used to send the board game to prisoners of war, Allied prisoners of war. But they put them in Canadian Red Cross packages because they figure as Canadians, there's nothing to smuggle in there. But in the board game, they would have actually like, they sew in some maps and actual money and a compass into the pieces. So to help to score. So there you go. That's my baseball connection, Monopoly.
It didn't really take
seriously?
Off Monopoly.
Oh,
so here's where it goes. Now, there have been other versions of Monopoly, right? There's a
Bongopoly
version of Monopoly. I think there's even a Game of Thrones version of Monopoly. You name it. You know, like every city has their own Monopoly board. Yeah.
Chelsea Football Club.
But did you know there's also a Major League Baseball version of Monopoly?
No.
Yeah. Can you believe it? The great thing is that it's instead of houses, you have bleachers or luxury boxes, and instead of hotels, you build stadiums. And
so, who's Park Avenue?
Park Avenue is the New York Yankees, unfortunately.
Oh, what a surprise!
Yeah. So what's Boardwalk then? What's the second most? Is
the
old Dodgers?
Kent Road / Boardwalk is the Arizona Diamondbacks.
What?
Which is bizarre because this was made in 1999.
By MLB.
By MLB, Major League Baseball.
Who are offending their team franchise.
I love this, by the way. This is how old this board game is. It still has Montreal Expos on it.
Are they the lowest? Are they like the Baltic Avenue?
I can't believe they're ahead. They're ahead of the Diamondbacks. Back then, you know, obviously, like, but it's got like, you know, you have the card, you have the thimble as the pieces. Here, you have the hot dog, and you have a cap, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
Cool. Nachos? Do they have nachos?
They don't have nachos, I'm afraid. Oh. No. So, but it's
can
a
you
great,
imagine? By the way, can you just put yourself in the meeting where the people who are actually creating this game are sitting down and talking about, like, what properties to give what and which team to give what and all the, and they're all playing politics and they want to make sure that MLB approves it. Oh no, you can't have the Diamondbacks ahead of the Expos. And like, that would just be like one of the like dumbest meetings you could ever be part of.
But this is still sealed in plastic. I haven't,
I was about to point that out. I've never opened it.
You know what I love about that, about me telling you I have this board game of Monopoly. This Major League Baseball version of Monopoly that I'm showing to you to the camera right now. Guess who gave me this? Guess who gave me this as a gift? Can you guess, Johnny?
Your missus?
It was you. You gave that to me as a gift. And that's why we love Johnny Gould, because that's what
the
we
goldfish
goldfish. That is a gift from Johnny he gave to me in 2004.
What I love is that Johnny, out of the kindness of his heart, gave you a gift and you never opened it.
Thank you, Josh. That is great. Exactly what I was about to say. I gave you something from the heart, so much so that I've forgotten I've given it to you, and you haven't even opened it.
No, here, because it's a collector's item now, because it has the Expos on it. So
I'm just a way of making money, am I?
It's going to be great on eBay.
That's like Rusty's College right there.
There, exactly. Yeah. But here's the thing, but what I love is that Johnny, you gave that to you bought that for me in Cooperstown. You bought that, actually, of all the things you could have bought in Cooperstown.
Yeah.
Oh, now it comes back. And that's why we love you, Johnny Gould, because of your memory. And that, well, I always said, Johnny Gould can hide his own Easter eggs.
There you go.
So there's my baseball pop reference game of the week. The MLB version
Gould,
of Monopoly. I'm sure there's an updated version somewhere without the Expos, and they've got...
But do you know what makes me laugh about this? I've just been sitting here watching you, looking at it, going, my God, he hasn't even opened it, thinking, God, I wish I had one of those. I wish I had that set. And I gave it to you. Fantastic. Love it. Right. Love it. Moving on.
I'm going to pick the film of our baseball crossover into film reference. The movie Airplane. One of the funniest films you'll ever see.
Love it.
I know that Johnny still hasn't seen Spinal Tap. I know that David still has never seen The Blues Brothers, but we've all seen the movie Airplane, correct?
Hundreds of times.
Kareem is fantastic in that. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
That's the reference I'm gonna be talking about. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has a hilarious scene as co-pilot Roger Murdoch. And in the scene, little Joey gets to visit the cockpit. You know, ever seen Gladiator films? Ever seen a grown man naked?
This is Manny Mota and Pedro Bourbon. I'm stepping over your lines.
It's little Joey looks over to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he says, "Hey, you're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar." And he goes, "No, you're mistaken. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the pilot, co-pilot." And he goes, "No. My dad always said that you just don't try enough except in the playoffs. You never think about it defensively." And then he looks over his shoulder and he grabs the kid and he goes, "Look, you tell your old man that you try like running up and down the court with Walton and Lanier for 48 minutes." And then he throws him away, throws him back and all that. And originally, you won't believe this, but the role was written for Pete Rose. Pete Rose was supposed to be pilot. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He could never do that. He could never.
The reason why he couldn't is because it was the middle of baseball season. It was 1979. He was still playing with the Phillies. It was in the summer they were filming.
The bookies. Yeah.
Not yet. He wasn't in the bookies yet. So yeah. Pete Rose would have been in that role, and I don't think it would have worked out well.
No way.
He's not charismatic.
He pulls that off like Kareem.
Airplane is one of the funniest movies altogether.
Kareem did such a good job.
You missed your cue. Airplane is one of the funniest movies altogether.
Airplane's one of the funniest movies.
No, you're supposed to say, "Surely baseball is one of the funniest movies of all time." And you're saying,
"Stop calling me
it is, but don't call me Shirley." Would have been much better, Eric.
Sorry, who's Shirley?
Moving on.
Okay, trivia answer. Get me out of here.
So we, I asked you earlier because of Max Scherzer's now become 22nd all time above Cy Young in strikeouts career, but he's also the current active pitcher of having the 99 games with 10 or more strikeouts. My question to you was, who has the most career games with 10 or more strikeouts? Was it A, Nolan Ryan? Was it B, Randy Johnson? Or was it C, Roger Clemens? Johnny Gould, I'll let you go first.
I'm going big. I'm going big Randy.
Randy Johnson for Johnny. Josh Chetwin, who are you going for?
We'll go A, the Ryan Express. Nolan Ryan.
David Lengel, what is your choice?
God, I mean, I think it's Ryan, but I don't want to pick Clemens for anything because he's such a, but I will, anyways, I'll pick Clemens.
You don't have to. Okay. All right. So
I love you to do it, just
because one of the other ones,
he's just trying to help so that if it's Clemens, he's like, I got it. And if it's Ryan, it's like, oh, that's what I would have guessed.
See,
makes me pick a 2 out of 3.
See, okay, I'm such a manipulator.
That's your safety. Well, anyways, in no particular order. Roger Clemens, 110 strikeouts, 110 games with 10 or more strikeouts. Okay. Nolan Ryan, 215 games with 8 strikeouts. Wow. 215.
Terrible pick for you, David.
Randy Johnson.
Embarrassing.
Randy Johnson.
And you hate him.
Randy Johnson, 212.
Yes!
No!
Yes! The only one who went...
No,
you said 210. You said 210 for...
212.
Gouldy.
212 is less
buddy.
Than...
You won the silver again, Gouldy.
Hang on, you said 212.
Yeah, and it's I said 215 for Nolan Ryan.
Oh, so... flipping hell. I was focusing on Dave so much. I thought you said 210.
Okay. You see, I knew it was Nolan Ryan.
See, that was the play all along, Dave. Well,
I totally knew that.
Well, that went well.
Okay. former all-time Mets great Nolan Ryan. Congratulations.
We want to hear from you. If you want to get in touch, you don't forget we're on Facebook, The Johnny and Josh Show. We're on Twitter at Johnny and Josh. If you want to ask questions, you want to suggest things that we discuss, then that's the way to do it. Don't forget, there's also all sorts of other things happening out there in the social world. Fantasy Baseball Behind Home Plate. Me and Jimbo have just issued another episode at BHP Pod. That's our Twitter account. You can also get in touch with other Ted Fred Stable shows. We've got a particularly good one in the world of NHL, Slap Shot Smack Talk.
Oh, yeah.
The address is at Slap Shot Talk. Say that when you're drunk.
Yes, we currently have a episode available right now that's just come out recently that rounds up the NHL trade deadline, and another one's coming out this Wednesday.
Fantastic. Well, check that out at Slapshot Talk with Eric and all his NHL mates. And if you're into basketball, then there's Anytime NBA Show at Anytime NBA Show. That's their Twitter account. Get in touch. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. It's all out there. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you hit the like. Yes. And make sure you get
point
involved.
To the bottom of the
well,
screen.
That's it for this week, guys.
Point to the bottom of the screen, Johnny, because we want likes as well in YouTube. It's somewhere down here, the icons. Point down, Johnny. Point down. Point, Johnny.
Okay.
I'll put the icon
what
there.
You want me to do?
Subscribe there.
That point.
Okay.
Go to the corner. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Don't forget to click like. We need likes as well. We need likes as well on all platforms, especially YouTube.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you for your company today. You all got a good week ahead of you?
Yes.
Sure.
Do you know, your lack of enthusiasm. Every time I try to finish the show in a
because
sort of
we don't want it to end,
way,
Johnny. It's very sad
you understand that you make that comment every week, and so it really drives us to be less and less enthusiastic.
Okay, well, I was hoping this week you might say, yeah, we've got a great week, but I hear you're off to Dubai and having an even better week. But nope, nobody picked up on it.
Gouldy, where are you off to, Gouldy?
I'm off to Dubai.
Gouldy?
I'm working for the Global Gift Foundation for His Royal Highness, the Prince of Dubai. It's going to be exciting.
Johnny, so when you get there, are you going to go on a shopping spree?
Why?
Because then I can ask you to buy this or to buy that.
Very good. Thank God you've got the waffle out.
Eat your waffle, Eric.
Absolutely. Boys, thank you ever so much. Been an absolute pleasure, as always. And thank you to our listeners for listening to the Johnny and Josh Show. We'll be back next week, same time, for all the great stories in Major League Baseball. Till then, stay safe, stay well. And we look forward to having your company very, very soon.